Welcome to Tomando Café con Jesús Hoyos. This is the podcast with vendors that we do, that I try to do every Friday, where we discuss coffee, and then we go ahead and start discussing, you know, anything CRM related. And today we have Jason Miller, which is the chief evangelist from Creatio, and we're going to talk about Creatio, a new player in the CRM market. We're going to discuss no-code, low-code, and anything that has to do with artificial intelligence. Jason, how are you doing today, sir? Welcome. Thank you.
I am good. Hola, buenos dias to all of our friends all around the world. It is very good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, you know, I've been following Creatio for the last couple of years. And, you know, I started, you know, discussing, you know, what you guys do with your local team in Latin America and the group that manages, you know, the relationship with the analysts. And I requested to talk to you and boom, and we're here. You know, that was quick, you know. And you guys have a really good, compelling message because you guys are very much starting, you know, from a greenfield level, you know, implementing low-code, no-code, which is the promise of many CRM vendors. And of course, you know, you also provided your AI copilot. But before we start, you know, discussing, you know, CRM, AI, what you guys do, are you a coffee drinker? Do you drink coffee? Not
at all. I drink a lot of coffee, my friend. I was down in Costa Rica late last year, and I now have some new favorite coffees that I picked up from down there. So I drink a lot of coffee, as you can imagine.
Yeah, usually, you know, I have my probably between 5 or 10 of, you know, the average is 8 cups per day. And, you know, I'm from Puerto Rico and my mother just got home back from Puerto Rico and she brought me something called Café Trabanco. It's a coffee for a small town in the hills, you know, up in the mountains in Puerto Rico, a town called Adjuntas, and it's homegrown coffee, you know, and I'm having it. It's really good. Lately, you know, I like, you know, have my coffee, you know, black, but, you know, whenever I travel, it doesn't matter, you know, the city, the country, I always like to go to the local coffee shop and ask, you know, for the local coffee. You know, I do the same with beer. You know, when I go, I like to have, you know, the local beer, you know, and it doesn't matter which one, just surprise me, you know. So I do that a lot, you know, and the reason, you know, we're having, you know, this podcast, Tomando Café con Jesús Hoyos, is because, you know, we should, when we travel in Latin America, you know, let's take a walk and have a cup of coffee, you know, especially after those big lunches, you know. And you know, a good cup of coffee, you know, a good conversation, I mean, is really good. So, saying that, Jason, tell us a little bit about your role and what Creatio, you know, does, you know, what you guys are good for.
Yeah, so Creatio started off as a professional service company some 20 odd years ago, about 10 years ago, as a matter of fact, celebrating our 10 year anniversary this year. The shift was made to become a product company, with the focus always being on no code, the ability to empower citizen developers, business technologists to manage business processes and everything that they touch. The company originally was named BPM Online, for the folks who may have recognized that. It was all business process in the cloud. Well, obviously many of the business processes that organizations face every single day, their biggest challenges in is around customer facing and it's customer engagement. So that's where the world of CRM comes to play. And what we've been able to do is we've been able to uniquely position ourselves in the market, playing up against the biggest players, the Salesforces, the Microsofts. And we believe that we have the not only the best enterprise no-code platform around with the most flexibility, but we have brought a modern architecture, a modern approach to the world of CRM. So that's kind of what Creatio is. Now, my role, ironically, I came from the partner side doing CRM implementations. I was working at a couple of large GSIs, and the latest one prior to joining Creatio was where I was heading up the North American CRM practice, where we were doing Microsoft Dynamics primarily and some Salesforce. And I've worked in, you know, a variety of these CRM technologies over the years, but Creatio approached me and said, hey, we'd like you to become a partner of ours. And I did. And I primarily chose it because I wanted to be able to offer my clients at the time an alternative to heavy IT laden, you know, CRM systems, whether it was Dynamics, Salesforce, whatever. 2 years later, I made the move to join Creatio, where I originally was part of the technical sales team. And now my role as chief evangelist is to go out and talk to folks, understand the value proposition of what no code means to an organization and how no code CRM in particular can help drive benefits. You know, things, when you think about no code, the big benefits are faster to start, faster to finish, the ability to iterate. We've always been so used to working in waterfall or other, you know, other approaches, even agile or scrum, where you're kind of time bound. You're either, it's going to take, you know, a full release cycle, which could be months, or if you're doing agile or scrum, you're locked into a 2 week or a 4 week sprint. What we found is with no code in a lot of aspects, you have the ability to build these pieces, modify a business process, collect additional data points very easily. As a matter of fact, we have customers that deploy to production up to 3 times a week. These are the types of ways that we're thinking about changing how people are thinking about the world of CRM and the world of no code.
You know, it's interesting because you haven't mentioned low code. You said no code. So what's your definition of no code from this perspective? Because there's no code, low code applications that you can use, you know, to develop and sit on top of other CRM, you know. Yep. Many CRMs have no code, low code, you know, application built within. Okay. And you also, you know, have low code, no code application for internal use and for external, meaning, you know, you deploy, you know, application for your end user, for your consumers, you know. Where do you fit? What's your definition of no code?
Well, what's interesting is this is a very common question. Now, the reality is the persona that you're trying to support. Now, you have companies like Mendix, OutSystems, really good low-code solutions. Their primary focus is making professional developers more effective and more efficient. Then you have pure no-code solutions like Uncork that are 100%, or Airtable, right, would be a great example, that are 100% focused on citizen development. And they're very siloed. You don't give Mendix and OutSystems to citizen developers, and you don't give Uncork and Airtable to professional developers. Creatio, we're kind of bridging the gap. We are a no-code first platform, which means we are focused on citizen developers. But we do expose a full IDE and a full range of low-code tools behind the scenes so that professional developers and citizen developers can work together. So to answer your question directly, what's the difference between low-code and no-code? It's the persona that you're trying to support. Creatio is a no-code application development platform where we've built industry-leading CRM on top of it to where it's just, again, this modern approach to application development using modern tools and being able to support citizen development as well as give tools to the IT group to support governance and building out integrations and being able to connect all of the different systems in an open architecture format. And it's just kind of a different approach overall to how we're thinking about the future of application development.
So what's the difference between citizen development or developer versus professional developer? Could you explain those two?
Sure. I personally would be a citizen developer. I have never coded a day in my life. My understanding of technology has always been from a business perspective, as time as a BA in my previous life, you know, working around ERP systems, CRM systems, understanding how these technologies impact the business. Thus, I would be using the no-code tools inside of Creatio, visual drag and drop technology to build things. A professional developer is one who solves problems by writing code. This is your traditional IT, you know, knowing Python, C Sharp, JavaScript, right? They are the folks that know specific languages and that, you know, think about it, we're in what, Gen 5, Gen 6 languages now, right? These are things that constantly evolve over time, constantly require reskilling. It was very interesting. I was actually at a dinner event last night and I was talking to some bankers. They've still got applications that are written in like old stuff. You know, it was funny. It's like, yeah, we want to swap out our old system, but literally nobody's even talked in this language in like 15 or 20 years. I even had somebody else bring me Cold Fusion the other day, and I'm like, it's 20 years old. I don't want to touch that.
I'm having so many flashbacks. I come from the COBOL, Informix 4GL era, you know, Pascal.
Informix, that's what I have. Yeah, COBOL, Pascal, you see those in financial service and insurance organizations all the time, right? The challenge of that is, you know, folks like you and I, we're not getting any younger, right? We remember those days. The challenge of that is if you still have those systems sitting around, it's a challenge, right? How are you going to maintain these? This is what organizations typically look at is technology debt. So when they're looking to, you know, get out of technology debt, or if they're looking at how do you provide a better experience into some of these legacy systems, using no-code tools as wrappers around those to be able to start that digital transformation process and not impact your day-to-day business operations is a great way to do it. Because what you're able to do then is give them that unified user experience from an employee standpoint, but as you're starting to pick away these pieces on the back end, it doesn't have major impacts on your business. It's a common use case that we deal with a lot.
So, you know, you mentioned governance, especially, you know, for IT and you know, the hardcore professional developers, you know? And now that we have, you know, some standards, you know, we're using GitHub, DevOps, you know, release management, change management, from the technical point of view, and anything that has to do with, you know, shadow IT, you know, what, you know, because a lot of these citizen developers, you know, are going to do a lot of stuff that IT say, thank you do it, you know, you manage it.
But
you need to follow these standards. Security, yeah. Governance, you know, mostly security, you know, make sure that you protect the data model. You know, there's a bunch of stuff, you know, around IT that, you know, that's IT supposed to do versus, you know, trying to develop application for them because it takes forever, lack of resources, lack of time, you know, everything, you know. So how you manage, you know, with Creatio or your methodology, your technology, that governance to be sure that, you know, the sitting developer with a really good methodology and the IT people can work each other in deploying these no code, you know, solutions.
You know, it's an interesting conversation when we start talking about governance. We all know, and CIOs are smart about this. They know that shadow IT happens, and typically it happens because they haven't been able to meet some of the needs of the business. You know, and it's one of those things that there's either not enough people, there's not enough time, there's not enough money to outsource it, or the ROI is just not there, right? It's a $50,000 problem, but it's a $200,000 solution. That just doesn't make sense. So when we think about this, the problem with shadow IT is primarily governance, right? The business will go off and buy their own tools. They'll build their own things, and they're not professional developers. They don't understand what, you know, a delivery lifecycle means. They don't understand what data governance means. Like, those are IT principles, but they're important ones. So when we think about this, enabling citizen development is primarily about giving tools to the business that you can, as an IT organization, provide governance, structure, good role-based access controls to make sure that data is secure, make sure that your visibility to certain things are controlled. And then you need to be able to not only set those things up, you need to be able to track it, monitor it, report on it, right? This is one of the things that we've been focused on over the last couple of years. And last year, we actually rolled out a dedicated governance app. It's the only one in the world that I'm aware of for pure no-code tools, right? You've got governance applications and stuff that sit on kind of code bases. But from a no-code tool standpoint, we allow GRC groups, CISOs, maybe centers of excellence, to track, monitor, maintain, and even remediate issues in lower environments so that they never make it to production. They have the ability to do this in a couple of ways. One, creating issues and tickets and preventing packages from moving. You talked about SDLCs earlier, right? We've got robust tool sets inside of Creatio and the Application Hub that allow the citizen developers to be able to migrate packages. But from a governance standpoint, a lot of times what we see is customers don't want to enable that. They want to make sure that things are secure, run it through a normal governance process, run it through Git or through Jenkins or something like that, and do a normal package deployment process. And we support that too. So we've got, you know, Clio tools that allow Git and Jenkins and a few other things to go out. Apache would be another one to go out and do all of your deployments throughout Creatio. So we're really set up. And this is when I think about the only, and I mentioned it earlier, enterprise grade no code tools. There's not a lot of them out there, and we like to think of ourselves as one of the bigger players in the market.
Yeah, and let me ask you, you know, this next question has to do about the foundation of a good data model. When I was, you know, looking at your demo, you know, we went through, you know, an acquisition process, marketing, sales, and customer service, and one of the challenges that you have today that, you know, many enterprises or even small businesses, you know, they have three or four CRMs, you know, or application, one for marketing, one for sales, and one probably will be B2B, the other one for B2C, the other one will be for service, you know, mean HubSpot, Salesforce, and Zendesk, and there is, you know, there is, I don't know how many millions of applications out there, you know, and when you try to do no code, or even low code, you know, you as the citizen developer, you know, the regular, you know, business administrator or business person that makes the decision, you know, they deeply need to understand that, you know, there's a good foundation with the data model. And I clicked with you guys when I saw this because, you know, I asked if you guys have a lead object. And they said, sure, but the lead object is associated to the customer. Okay, a lead object is an interest that you have, you know, so you can easily, when you come in as a person into the system, you can quickly identify that person. It doesn't matter your banking, your higher education, whatever. You say, ah, Jesus, so you're a customer. Okay, and this is, for me, is important because, you know, traditionally in marketing automation tool, you are the email. In a sales, automation system, you are the account. Okay, with opportunity, you know, and when you do, you know, customer service, you're the ticket, or when you do traditional customer journeys, you are the subscriber to the email, to the SMS, to the push notification, you know, and then, you know, when I saw that, you know, and the ease, you know, how easy it was to move around and create those apps, that's what it clicked to me, because today the biggest challenge that we have is that we have a lot of technical debt. We have a lot of functional debt, shadow IT, no governance, low code, no code, because, you know, the person who's doing this, they don't know what they don't know. But I saw that foundation. I said, I can breathe.
And you bring up a really good point there, because go back 15, 20 years ago, right? Most of the tools that you mentioned were built purposely because everybody wanted to associate in a certain way, right? They wanted to associate to a marketing contact, which was an email, or they wanted to associate to an account, or they wanted to associate to a person. The challenge with that was, once you deployed some of these legacy technologies one way, it's very difficult to make those changes. And in a lot of aspects, some of these tools don't even support that kind of one-to-end relationship. So when we thought about it, and the way that we've architected the solution is that each one of those objects, lead, account, contact, customer, ticket, case, whatever, each one of them is independent. But the no-code platform understands those relationships so that when a lead comes in, a lead would be tied to Jason, or it would be tied to Jesus. But Jesus is also tied to X, Y, and Z. So there's this multi-pronged relationship. Think of it as a matrices model that I can, as Jason, I could have a relationship to an account, to a contact, to a case, to a marketing email, to an event, to any number of things. I could be tied to a contract for you know, certain use cases, right? The system allows you to build those multi-layered relationships all through drag and drop. And the system manages those relationships. It's not like you have to have a front-end web designer plus a back-end database administrator plus an application administrator. The system takes care of a lot of these things for you, which makes the not only the development and the maintenance of these applications easier, it makes the overall architecture a lot more streamlined. So even if you get to the point where you're doing data integrations, right, you may have all of these different systems where over here it's called an account. Over in another system, it's called a customer. Over in another system, it's called in the banking world, what's it called? A legal entity, right? That's fine. You can do those multi-level relationships, but they still come back to Alpha Business, Jason Miller. That relationship's always there. And we give people the flexibility to manage that. And it's just an out-of-the-box thing. And don't even think about it anymore, but it's true. It can be a challenge in a lot of older systems.
Yeah. So before we move to an artificial intelligence and the creation Copilot, let me do a quick review of where we at in this conversation. You know, you guys come from a system integrator company who develop a platform to do business processes. You know, BPM online. You now have a product, okay, that has a common data model. Marketing, sales, customer service, no code versus low code. There, you have some frameworks. You have, governance. You know, you can help the citizen developer, which is the traditional user from the business side. You can also help the professional developer as well, and they can put all this together. Okay, so now you have a foundation. You know, you have something that everything is tied together. Okay, and now, you have, Creatio Copilot, which is, the next wave. You know, you're ingesting, artificial intelligence in there. Tell me about that transition and what the Creatio Copilot means.
So here again, we're taking a slightly different approach to maybe the way a lot of other folks are thinking about it. And I don't like to pick on Salesforce, but it's a very good example of how there's one approach versus what we're doing. If you think about AI, there are multiple types of AI. You've got traditional AI, which is machine learning, predictive analytics, predictive scoring, those types of things. These are, things that you typically see, in our world, it's in our machine learning models, which is part of Copilot, but it's also in the Salesforce world, that would be Einstein Insights. Now, that's nice. We can do the same things to get, both of us can accomplish the same goals. Then you think about the generative AI side, the newest side, right? 18 months ago, OpenAI brought this to the world, right? November of 22. And everybody's been running very quickly to start bringing this capability into your business world. So with our Copilot, yes, it's AI assistant, but we're bringing both generative and traditional AI into a single unified experience. Unlike, say, like Salesforce, where you'd have to have Einstein Insights and Einstein GPT, a different product. Then you'd have to stitch that together with Sales Cloud, Service Cloud, Marketing Cloud, whatever you're going to do for your flow. Whereas with Creatio, we're managing it all from one single place. So we feel like this is not only a unique approach, bringing traditional AI and generative AI together. I think as a lot of folks have started to call it composite AI approach. In fact, I wrote an article on it a couple of weeks ago about why I think this is a better approach. What's unique about this, though, is that you're going to build, manage and maintain them all in the same place. And we're going to democratize it so that those same citizen developers can do this. You don't have to have a computer science degree. If you can understand how to build pivot charts, pivot tables, you understand the data pieces that you need to run against, you can build all the traditional models. And then you can also be better informed about how to ask Copilot for the generative thing. And there's a million different use cases for this. One of the ones that, especially if you think about the application level, right? The CRMs, the sales, the service and marketing, we can talk about those. But even down at the no code application level, asking Copilot to build business processes, asking them to build application prototypes on the fly. It's a very unique proposition because it's all in one place versus having to go to all these other stitched together pieces of platform.
So let me ask you this. So when you're saying, build business processes, are you talking to build an end-to-end process versus building a workflow or a flow?
It can be both. That's a really good question because we've got the idea of big, long string processes, right? Maybe a customer onboarding journey. That would have several stages, right? And we manage that one way. But I'm also talking about being able to ask Copilot, build me a business process approval or a business approval process that collects the information, sends an email to the manager, gets approval from the manager, and then changes the status of the approval and sends out an email notification. Just through that natural language, Copilot would create a BPMN business process that can then be used in any number of different applications. It could be used inside of, say, an order approval process, or it could be used inside of a case review or a case escalation process, or it could be used as part of a quoting process. These are the types of things that you're able to ask Copilot to do from a business process standpoint. And then obviously, when you think long scale, long-term end-to-end processes that have stages, you might have multiple nested sub-processes so that they can all work together to drive a maximum degree of freedom and automation in a lot of things that you're going to be doing.
How will you manage the, you know, the aspect of you having a good data quality? And let me explain that. You know, having duplicates in the CRM system, understanding, you know, the taxonomy of what the campaign is, versus, you know, what a journey is versus a flow, you know, understanding that, you know, you truly have a good subset of a global related list for all the countries, all the country codes, or all the phone numbers, validating that you really have a good formatting of the, you know, the 10 traditional, you know, digits, and a good email, a good email format, and all those details in a CRM system, you need to be sure that they're set, that in many systems, you know, that's, I mean, that's a nightmare. Doesn't matter. Pick any CRM. That's a nightmare, you know?
Yeah, it can be. And truthfully, it could be with us too. But if you think about it holistically, the problem is usually during the initial setup, right? So as you're creating a new data element, you always need to set the boundaries of that data element. And we'll use a zip code for an example. Postal codes all around the world have different structures, different formats. But typically, there's always a source that you can reference back to. So if you know your boundaries, right? So if I know that in the US, a zip code is always a five-digit number, and it's always numeric characters only, I can set that as a criteria. If I know that a phone number in the US always has 10 digits, I can set that, right? And you can start setting controls at an element level. But you can also set them at a business process level too. So an example would be if I'm going to do updates to information, I can control the who's updating, the when it's updated, how it's updated, and I can run duplication checks as part of those business processes. Deduplication is a thing that all CRM systems need to be able to do. You need to be able to look for things like lookalikes, exact matches, similar matches, and then prompt or inform the user that, you may want to merge these. Sometimes you don't want to. That's why you want to have human in the middle business processes. This is the difference between RPA and DPA, right? RPA, just that rhythmic click, it does it on its own. DPA is, you know, being able to engage humans as part of those processes. This is why Creatio kind of builds everything out the way we do when it comes to the BPMN processes. There's both human or user interactions and systemic interactions. This is the way that we think about driving good, effective governance, good, effective business processes through everything that we do.
Okay. And now let me ask you the next question, which, you know, it has to do with prompting and the model that you're using, you know. And let me give you one example. If you want to, you know, create a scoring algorithm, you know, using a particular, you know, large language model, you know, will you use the data that is within that CRM system? Do you compare that to metadata that is in other system, or you allow the company, you know, to go ahead and create their own, you know, fine-tuned, you know, language model to do that specific scoring somewhere else, you know, and keep learning and come back? You know, what would be the mechanism to be able to do whatever they want to do based on the data that they have?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm going to answer it in two ways. Whenever we're thinking about AI, whether it's generative or traditional, the starting point is always data that resides within Creatio. Now, that data can be appropriated from other sources. We've always followed a very open architecture approach, being able to connect to any REST or SOAP API, process any batch files that may need to be processed down to from CSVs to JSON files, whatever the case is. We've always been kind of, you know, supporting that open architecture approach. When it comes to LLMs and using the generative side, you can do it a couple of different ways. First and foremost is we are not going to dictate what LLMs can be used with Creatio. So we're not building our own proprietary LLM. We want you to use LLMs that will drive the most benefit for you. Matter of fact, we'll even let you connect to multiple LLMs for different use cases. I'll give you an example. Something like email generation, right? Email generation, OpenAI is fine for that, right? You can do that. But if you want, if you're in the automotive space, dealer management systems have specific language models for that. Or if you're in the healthcare space, there are specific LLMs for medical. We don't want to be a barrier. So we'll allow organizations through secure microservices to connect to any LLM they want. Certain use cases may allow you, or you may want to go to OpenAI would be an example. And we've got an out-of-the-box connector for that. Or you may have your own, if you're, you know, someone like USAA Insurance, who has multiple language models inside their instances already. Some of it's for property and casualty. Some of it's for life and annuity, right? They've already got their own LLMs. Or you can ask for us to be able to connect to one of the other open source ones, Gemini, for an example, right? This is our approach. Now, what information will we feed those LLMs? That's the controlling point. So before, you know, whenever you set up these Copilot scenarios, a citizen developer will be able to set them up. But there's governance pieces. We've extended the governance app to cover all of the Copilot scenarios so that there's always certainty that protected information never leaves the four walls of the customer's instance. So not only have we put those controls in place, we've got a complete data protection layer so that before we connect to any LLM, any protected data that's identified is anonymized or obfuscated so that it doesn't leave your Creatio instance. This is a very important point when it comes to governance of especially generative AI, because as you're going outbound to these LLMs, you want to be careful what you're sharing. Never mind the fact you want good data to go out to these LLMs. Bad data results in hallucinations. This is the whole point around good governance, good data structure, and good data protection controls in place as you're starting to use these new generative AI solutions.
Yeah, one of the challenges that I see is that, you know, right now, you know, I'm doing a lot of AI assessments, especially with mm-hmm. whatever CRM, you know, my customers have. And, you know, they have, you know, they're using the, you know, the email language model, you know, to do, you know, email marketing campaigns, you know, in mm-hmm. Marketo, for example. But then they're using the email generation, you know, within Salesforce, you know. So I said, which one is which one? You know?
Sometimes that's the problem. Sometimes they don't even know. And this was another conversation I had the other day. Somebody was like, well, I want to be able, from a governance standpoint, I want to be able to inform my customers if I'm sending them an email that this AI was either in, or this email was either in part or wholly generated by AI. Well, you can set up governance controls that says any email that's generated with AI has a little disclaimer at the bottom. This email was in partial or in whole generated using AI, right? Those are simple controls that can be set up. But a lot of times, if you don't know what LLM you're connecting to, you don't know the source of the data that's being fed into them. This is where organizations can start to get in trouble, and you start, I don't want to say start leaning towards driving hallucinations, but it's obviously a possibility. And it's the one thing that everybody's talking about with AI is how do I prevent hallucinations? How do I monitor for hallucinations? These are the really big topics, right? And we think we've got some pretty good controls and governance and ways that we think about controlling those. But ultimately, it comes down to the human that's using those scenarios to be able to review and approve those generative AI scenarios.
So, Jason, you know, why are people, you know, buying Creatio? Because, you know, you have one application that have marketing, sales, and customer service, or they're buying because you are mm-hmm. low code, or they're buying because they need a tool to do, you know, business processes. Are they buying you because they need to replace another CRM system or replace many CRM systems? They need to bring everything together. Yeah. Are they buying, you know, from you because, you know, they can verticalize, you know, what you have, you know, What are the main key points where customers are buying from you guys?
I would say there are three types of buyers that come to Creatio. The first are the folks that are looking for a no-code application development platform. They want to enable citizen development, but they need better governance and controls. They typically come to us for those types of things because they don't have enough IT staff. They know that shadow IT exists and they need to get their hands around it from a governance standpoint. These are typically IT buyers, CIOs, CTOs, et cetera. You know, and then they're typically looking at us, Mendix, OutSystems, and if they want to enable citizen development, they're going to come to us and they'll take Mendix and OutSystems out of play pretty quick. But that's typically who that first scenario is. The second scenario, people who have legacy CRM systems. And again, you know, I think of Salesforce and Microsoft, you know, Dynamics. D365 is okay, but it's still very IT heavy. Salesforce, there's so many pieces to it. It takes an absolute army to develop and maintain it, right? This is why, you know, in like even my previous life, we got paid a lot of money just to maintain systems. So those are harder to shift as your business needs change. They're harder to shift. It requires a lot of work, a lot of energy, and a lot of money. So that's kind of scenario number two. Those are typically chief customer officers, chief customer experience officers, maybe chief marketing officers, CIOs, CEOs that are trying to drive better customer engagement, and they're not feeling like they get the value out of their existing spend with their legacy CRM systems. Then the third one is typically where they've either outgrown what they've done. So organizations that are growing that maybe haven't had a CRM before, it's a green field. And then those folks are coming for ways that they can start using CRM, but that's still enterprise grade without having to go way down market to, you know, maybe a tool that doesn't offer sales, service, and marketing, right? I mean, for the most part, Microsoft, Salesforce, Creatio, we're one of the only players that give you all three as an offering, right? You can go buy, you know, Hub and get some lightweight sales, really good marketing, but you can't do service. You'd have to go get Zen, or you'd have to go get ServiceNow or something like that to be able to do customer service, which is an okay approach. But again, then you still end up with data silos and you end up with, you know, multiple systems. Not saying that that's not the right approach for some organizations, but especially organizations that are growing, where they don't want to immediately take on more tech debt by having more siloed systems. Creatio is a great way to be able to get a lot without having to spend, you know, the millions of dollars that you would on Salesforce. These are kind of the three typical buying personas that we see and the reasons that they come to us.
So, saying that, and this will be, you know, my last topic, and, you know, so we can wrap up. You know, you have a very, you know, easy to understand pricing structure, and you have the Copilot in, and, you know, many companies, you know, and I'm still doubting, you know, who has the time and money to invest in AI, you know, this year and next year, because they have to shift budgets, you know, from one place to another. And, you know, how is your approach for pricing for AI? You know, is included, is not included, is an add-on, is based on transactions? You know, how you guys are going to manage that? Because that's a big question out there, you know?
You mentioned
Salesforce, but this is very much the case for, you know, all the other CRM vendors out there. Mm-hmm. I have some AI here, you know, like, scoring from Salesforce, for example, and then I have the full-blown, you know, Einstein Pilot, Copilot.
Yep.
And, you know, if you look at the other ones, it's the same. You know, I give you something, and then you have everything else, you know. It's going to cost you money, okay? And it doesn't matter, ERP, CRM, whatever, you know. So I think Soho mentioned that they're going to include it. I don't know about the other ones. I'm still trying to catch up with that. But what is your approach?
So in general, if we think about what the big drivers in cost of AI is, it's with the LLMs, right? So it's you know, per token fee or per API call fee, something like that. So with Creatio, because we're doing a lot of it, right? All of the traditional AI takes place inside of our Creatio instance, there's no cost. We've had most of these tools in place for years and people have been using them at no cost. So obviously we're not going to start charging for that. That doesn't make sense. For the generative AI, if you're going to, so we're not hosting an LLM. So because we're not hosting, we have no cost that we're going to pass through to our customers. Obviously, if organizations want to use OpenAI, they will want to probably buy a dedicated LLM from OpenAI. There will be a cost for that, and that will be a transaction between the customer and OpenAI. Or if they're going to buy Gemini, there will be a cost for that as well. If they need us to host an LLM for them, we will work with them to figure out what the right pricing structure is. But so far, we announced Copilot a little over a month ago, but so far, everyone has been managing those things on their own. I think that 24 will be the year that people actually start using AI. I think a lot of people dabbled last year. I think this will be the year where people actually start driving value out of it. I think 25 will be a year of exponential growth. This is Jason's opinion, not Creatio's opinion. I think what we're going to see over time is going to be two things. One, just like the cost of cloud storage has significantly come down over time because of the demand and people have just gotten smarter about how they're doing it, I think that the cost per generative AI call will come down significantly over time. You know, where a token may be 30 cents a call right now, it'll be pennies, you know, 1-2 cents a call in the future. I think that will have to happen, because if it doesn't, what's going to happen is organizations will say, all right, look, I can start building my own LLM, control the tuning, manage all of these things, keep it inside of my firewall. That's an even better governance game, right? Because then I'm not exposing anything out at all. I think organizations will start looking at doing their own LLMs, and then the pricing on the market ones, the cloud-based ones, are going to have to come down, because that's the only way they're going to stay competitive. That's my guess. It's going to take a couple of years for that to happen, 25, 26. But what you're going to see is that more and more folks are going to start using generative AI in new and creative ways. There's a million different use cases you can think of. So I think you're going to start seeing that more and more. Creatio is not planning on charging for any of our connectors to these LLM models. We're not going to charge for any of the traditional AI capabilities. You know, the only cost really will be to the LLM that the customer chooses.
So listening to you, so I am an IT organization that has shadow IT, you know, and I want to empower. Forget if I have the resources or I don't have the resources, but I want to empower, you know, the business, you know, to move quickly, you know, with their CRM system, you know, no code, okay, with established governance. And at the same time, I already have a group, you know, somewhere that are doing data science, okay, or those are the resources that I want to invest, you know, and they're building, you know, a good, you know, AI governance strategy with any type of LLMs, okay, you know, you guys could be the perfect match.
I'd like to think so. And we provide a lot of flexibility and a lot of thought leadership in the world of no code. One thing that we haven't even talked about 2 years ago, our CEO, Catherine Kostareva, and the founder of a consulting firm named Tachyon Solutions out of Seattle, wrote a book. And the book is called The No Code Playbook. The No Code Playbook is not marketing material. The only place it says Creatio on it at all is the back cover just below Catherine there. But this could be used for Uncork. It could be used for Airtable. It could be used for any no code solution. And it talks about how to govern, when to govern, how to set up your organization for success when using no code tools. Everything down to the when should I enable DIY citizen development? When should I do it within a center of excellence? When should I do it within a fusion team, right? There's questions that you have to ask around complexity, business complexity, governance complexity, right? These types of things that you always have to ask when choosing not only the right tools to solve your business problems, but who you want to enable and who you want to be engaged during this creation of these applications. That's what the book talks about. And I think it's important because organizations have shifted over time. When we think about no code and we think about the world of AI, they make a very powerful duo, especially if you have the ability to democratize who can use them. from citizen developers to professional developers, empowering the people who need it most, who need and have the understanding of what the business is doing. This is truly where the idea of democratization of application development, democratization of the use of AI comes together. This is why we truly believe it is a very powerful combo that organizations of all size can take advantage of to really help transform their business.
Jason, you just pretty much did the outro. So perfect, thank you. So for the one that are listening to this podcast, are gonna be sometime in May, I believe, second week or third week of May. You guys are gonna have a show in Miami. I'm gonna be there. Hopefully I got a chance to meet you there in person, talk to customers, understand what you guys are doing. And I think, you know, there's a good distinction here of what a citizen developer is versus a professional developer is. I'm glad that there is a name to that because both of them are everywhere, okay? And I think that distinction helps a lot understand, you know, what is no code, low code, you know, everything that Creatio can offer. So Jason, thank you very much. Anything that you want to say?
You mentioned the No Code Day event that is in Miami. It's our big global event, May 9th and 10th at the JW Marriott. If you wanted more information, you can check it out at www.creatio.com. Feel free to reach out to me. But I do want to let your folks know that for the folks who are listening to this podcast, we will be coming to other events all around the world. As a matter of fact, I did one in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia early this year. We'll be doing one in Mexico City later this year. I know we'll be in Paris, we'll be in London, we'll be in New York, Boston, Austin, all over the world, helping people understand the power of Creatio and the power of no code.
Thank you, Jason. So this has been Jesús Hoyos, Tomando Café con Jesús Hoyos. Ya saben, el podcast está disponible en las diferentes podcast platforms y en YouTube. Thank you very much. See you until the next time. Se cuidan mucho.